We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. Last night I spoke at a Republican event in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And at the end of my speech, I was asked a question. What if Joe Biden is inaugurated on January 2nd? What if President Trump loses? And what if we actually lose the two seats in Georgia? With a sigh of frustration, I was asked, what do we do if we suffer defeat? Today's show is an answer to that. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome to today's edition of The Rebellion. As I mentioned, I spoke at a Republican event in Tulsa, Oklahoma last night. And as I was finishing my speech, there was a Q&A time. And one of the people that was attending there, a woman that's been a loyal GOP voter and advocate and worker for years, asked the question that I mentioned in the introduction, what if President Trump actually does lose his legal challenges? And she asked that with a sigh of resignation. She doesn't believe he'll prevail. Now, whether you agree or disagree with that, I think her question is very, very pertinent. And we need to be able to respond to those who are asking us, both those that disagree and agree with our politics. What if Joe Biden is president? What if Kamala Harris is vice president? What if we even lose the two Senate seats, the runoff elections in Georgia, and there's a 50-50 split in the Senate, with Kamala Harris now deciding all votes because she would be, as vice president, the person breaking the tie? What if? So today's show is a response to that, and I'm going to get into the issue of book burning as a context for the answer to the question. Because in yesterday's show, I finished with a quote from Ray Bradbury on burning books, which was the very premise of Fahrenheit 451. I'm going to go back to that quote, and then we're going to discuss the movement to burn books, to ban knowledge, to get rid of ideas that has been prevalent throughout the course of modern history. We'll use that as the context to the answer of what do we do if we find ourselves in a losing position. Before I get into that, remember that you can subscribe to The Rebellion by going to patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. patreon.com/DREVERETTPIPER. And remember, please listen to episodes of The Rebellion via that podcast and then download them and post them in your social media. Parler, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever social media you use, please post issues of the podcast there that upgrades our algorithms. We get more listeners. We need to do that if we're going to continue to do The Rebellion. And as I said metaphorically, if we want to continue to pay the light bill here, we need to get more subscribers to The Rebellion. So please join. Please join The Rebellion by doing that. So back to today's show. Ray Bradbury's quote that I finished yesterday's show with is something that we need to revisit. Here's the quote I gave you. And this was with regard to Fahrenheit 451, his classic dystopian novel. A novel that many of us don't include when we talk about the times in which we live. We talk about Orwell's 1984. We talk about Huxley's Brave New World, both appropriate, I might add, because we live in a time when so much of this dystopian control of ideas and of people, this Orwellian craziness of Big Brother watching over us, and we don't even seem to care, even though if we just bothered to read a good book, we would see the dangers of giving our souls. I was actually probably a Freudian slip right there. I was going to say giving ourselves, but giving ourselves and our souls over to big government and letting somebody, this elite, this unknown person behind the curtain in Washington, D.C., or in your state's capital, in Michigan or New York or California, tell you how to live your life, tell you how to celebrate Thanksgiving, whether you can or you cannot, tell you what you have to wear on your mask
if you want to go about doing commerce. And mark my words, it's coming. They're going to tell you that you have to have a vaccination and have proof thereof to just go about daily business of buying food at the grocery store and whatnot. We live in a time where it seems that 1984 was prophetic and that Brave New World was prophetic. Well, Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 was also prophetic in the same way, because Bradbury warned of a time when ideas would be expunged from culture. That would be the key mode of control by the oligarchs, the elites, the know-it-alls, the smart folks, the people that consider you rubes, lacking gray matter, a basket of deplorables, you know, those people in the hinterlands, the flyover states that just won't kowtow. They won't march with us. They won't follow us without resistance. Those are the stupid people. Well, Ray Bradbury's book was about that type of arrogance. And he once said this: there is more than one way to burn a book, and the world is full of people running about with lit matches. Every minority feels it has the will, the right, the duty to douse the kerosene and light the fuse. Fire Captain Beatty, the main character in my novel, Fahrenheit 451, described how the books were burned, first by minorities, each ripping a page or a paragraph from this book and then that, until the day came when the books were empty and the minds were shut and libraries were closed forever. Now, the interesting thing is the minorities that Ray Bradbury was referring to were religious minorities, because he was not a fan of traditional Christianity. He wasn't a fan of religion at all, quite frankly. So here is the full quote. Ray Bradbury said this: there is more than one way to burn a book, and the world is full of people running about with lit matches. Every minority — here he describes what he means by minority — be it Baptist, Unitarian, Irish, Italian, octogenarian, Zen Buddhist, Zionist, Seventh-day Adventist, women's libbers, Republicans, Foursquare gospel folks — every minority feels it has the will, the right, the duty to douse the kerosene, light the fuse. My book describes how books were burned, first by minorities that he just described, each ripping a page or a paragraph from this book or that, until the day came when the books were empty and the minds were shut and the libraries were closed forever. So he's putting a lot of people, whether you're Buddhist or Baptist, whether you're Irish or Italian, whether you're old or whether you're young, whether you're a Seventh-day Adventist or whether you're a women's lib, his language, or a Republican or a Foursquare gospel folk — he's putting all these people with different agendas in the same basket. Now, I take issue with that, but his general point is a good one, that every minority group thinks it has the right to burn everybody else's books. And that's the warning of Fahrenheit 451. So in the rest of the show, I'm going to cite some of these movements. And ironically, I think what Bradbury is missing is it's the Christian worldview. It's the Christian worldview, the Baptist worldview, if you will, that he puts, or the Foursquare gospel worldview that he puts in the same basket of bad thinking and bad ideas. It's the Christian worldview, and it's the GOP worldview. It's the covenantal worldview. It's the worldview that believes in covenants, constitutions, Magna Cartas, biblical boundaries. It's that worldview that doesn't go out and destroy opposing ideas by burning them. It goes out and confronts opposing ideas with truth. It's the Christian worldview that stops the burning. And I think that's what Ray Bradbury was missing in Fahrenheit 451. Let's take an early break, acknowledge our sponsors, and then when I get back, I'm going to cover some book-burning movements throughout the course of history, and then give you what I think is the solution to the predicament that we now find ourselves in, should Joe Biden and Kamala Harris be our president and vice president on January 20th, and should, Lord forbid, pray to the contrary, that we lose both runoff races for the Senate in Georgia. What do we do? What should you do? How do you respond to that? What is the solution? There is one, because it's not the first time in the course of human history that freedom-loving people have found themselves in such a predicament. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. We're going to acknowledge our sponsors and be right back in a couple minutes. Welcome back to The Rebellion. So it isn't the first time we found ourselves in a place in history where people that don't like freedom, that want more control, that are grasping the ring of power and don't want to let go of it, whether they be Antifa, whether they be Black Lives Matter, whether they be critical race theorists like Nicole Hannah Jones, whether they be blatant racists like Nick Cannon, rather they be power-hungry progressives like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. It's not the first time we've found ourselves in this predicament where opposing ideas are silenced by government edict, whether it be burning the books, whether it be destroying them in other ways, or in today's parlance, rather it be censorship imposed upon us by big tech companies like Facebook and Twitter, where it's the equivalent of banning books because they won't let contrary ideas even be expressed on their platforms anymore, like we covered yesterday. So let's go through just really quick. I mean, I could spend two or three shows going through the places or the situations in history where books have been burned. In 1933, I told you yesterday, 34 university towns across Germany burned over 25,000 books. They were primarily works of Jewish authors like Einstein and Freud, and books went up in flames alongside other blacklisted American authors such as Hemingway and Helen Keller, while Nazi students stood by the bonfires saying Heil Hitler and saluting, giving the Nazi salute. In Berlin, 4,000 people gathered to hear Joseph Goebbels, and this is just stunning. I mean, remember this, because you're hearing some of the exact same nonsense coming out of the elites today. He declared the era of extreme Jewish intellectualism. He actually condemned intellectualism. He labeled it Jewish. So what's the alternative to that? German stupidity? Well, apparently so. The era of extreme Jewish intellectualism is now at an end, said Goebbels. It is to this end that we want to educate you as they burn their books, and thus you will do well in this midnight hour to commit to the flames the evil of the spirit of the past. Again, killing history, killing tradition, killing those things that have been proven over the course of time to be true, to be challenging, to be something we should think about. He was killing Jewish intellectualism because it was against the spirit of Germany. His quote was, it was against the un-German spirit, the un-German individual, that they were destroying these ideas. And then, let's see, let's go on. The Red Guard, remember the Red Guard of the Cultural Revolution in China? This wasn't that long ago. This was a time of burning books and getting rid of the intellectual. People that had glasses were targeted by who? The young people, the students, the college students, the Red Guard in Red China. This was a time where militant university and high school students formed into paramilitary units. Does it sound stunningly familiar to what you're seeing in the streets of Portland and Minneapolis and Kenosha and Baltimore and New York City right now and Washington, D.C.? Students formed into paramilitary units during the Cultural Revolution. And these young people, they wore uniforms. They wore uniforms with these red bands on one of their sleeves, and then they went out into the culture, into the streets, under the authority of Mao Zedong, and they went out to combat revisionist authorities. In other words, those that they considered to be the privileged in society. We're going to attack privilege. We're going to attack those that have the authority to write books and present ideas that are contrary to the revolution of Mao Zedong. They wanted control. They wanted to expunge anything that stood in their way, any ideas that were opposed to the agenda of the Cultural Revolution. And this was in 1976. At one point, the Red Guard reached 11 million people. It's just stunning what they accomplished. More, the Khmer Rouge in Pol Pot's Cambodia, they went about attacking intellectuals, burning books, and killing people in the killing fields that just wore glasses. This was in 1975 in Pol Pot's utopian state of Cambodia. It's stunning. They killed over 10 million people, by the way. In World War II, there were tons of examples where the Germans targeted libraries and burned books. Again, it wasn't just Joseph Goebbels and the bonfires that you see in the previous example. The Louvain Library in Belgium was targeted. Over 9,000 books were burned. 9,000 books were burned in that library alone. Other Polish libraries were targeted. Over 300,000 books were burned. Chinese libraries were targeted by the Japanese during World War II. 200,000 books, 350,000 books, 224,000 books were burned or destroyed in various different libraries by the Japanese in China. The works in the British Museum were targeted by German bombers during the 1940s Blitz on London. And thousands, 150,000 books were lost in just one bombing. So we see evidence time and time again of targeting books to be banned, targeting things to be destroyed that represent contrary ideas, uncomfortable ideas, ideas that are challenging to those that are in power or those that want to be in power. I could go on and on and on. In December 1943, in Alessandria, Italy, a mob of supporters of the German-imposed Italian Socialist Republic, okay, Mussolini's buds, attacked a synagogue in a small Jewish community on Via Milano, and books and manuscripts were taken up from the synagogue and set on fire in the Piazza Ratazzai. This is just one more example of books being burned. And by the way, after they burned these Jewish books, they gathered up the Jews and they carted them off to Auschwitz. This was from Italy after the book burnings. More. You want to know more? In Warsaw, Poland, there were over 16 million volumes that were destroyed as a result of the Nazi attack and destruction of Warsaw. 16 million books were burned. I could go through the various different libraries that suffered under that attack. In 1941, German bombers specifically targeted a national library in Serbia, in Belgrade, and an entire collection was destroyed. 300,000 books were lost. I could go on and on and on. My point in going through all this is that you should never succumb to this type of activity to eliminate conflicting and challenging ideas, because the biblical worldview is a worldview that is grounded in the pursuit of truth. I've talked to you before about the four pillars: the primacy of Jesus Christ, the priority of Scripture, and the third pillar is the pursuit of truth. The fourth is the practice of wisdom. And my point in those four pillars of a worldview was this: the primacy of Christ, I believe that He's the Son of God, and therefore I'm going to trust Him for His revelation on how we should be living our lives. The primacy of Jesus Christ, the priority of Scripture. I believe that the Word was made flesh and dwells among us. So the primacy of Christ is known through the priority of Scripture. It is that Word, that revelation, that time-tested truth that gives us the best standard for human liberty and human freedom. Therefore, the third pillar, the pursuit of truth, is so important. You pursue truth. You don't burn those things that are antithetical to truth. You challenge them, and you can destroy, if you will, those ideas through good debate, because your ideas are superior, not because you're just going to silence the opposition because you want a safe space and you're going to scream microaggression and trigger warning, or you're going to call for Facebook or Twitter to silence those people you disagree with. That's the equivalent of modern-day book burning. And Christians should never go out and burn books like we've seen some Christians do. Some extreme, I'll use that word, extreme Christian groups will go out and burn translations of the Bible, for example, that are anything but the King James Version because they consider those versions to be inferior. The irony is that the King James Version, and I'm not disparaging it, I think it's very valuable, and if that's what you choose to read, it is accurate in its entirety, but yet it doesn't go back to the original languages. It goes back to the Latin Vulgate in terms of being the basis for its translation. So if you go back to the ESV or some other translations that go directly back to the original language, they have greater accuracy. So don't go out and burn things you disagree with. What you should do is go challenge those ideas you disagree with. I'm going to close the show by telling you the story one more time about my interview, my time with Dave Rubin on the Rubin Report. Now, Dave Rubin is a guy that disagrees with me on tons of things. I don't think Dave Rubin is a Christian. In fact, I would argue by virtue of his chosen lifestyle, it's antithetical to Christianity. Dave Rubin is a classic libertarian now. He used to be radical left. He's a classic libertarian. He's a married, quote-unquote, homosexual, and he had me on his show. We had a wonderful time talking about what? Liberty. You see, he had me on the show to talk about my bestseller, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth, my bestseller. But it ended up that he wanted to talk about my more obscure book, a book that didn't make the bestseller list, my book, Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. He was intrigued by the title, and he wanted me to talk about it. And why? Because he understood the danger of radical ideas, the danger of being radicalized to the point where you want to burn down libraries, burn books, and destroy and eliminate any conflicting idea from culture. He understood the danger of that because he had been part of that movement. And I explained to him the nature of my book, Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas, and I explained it in the context of the four pillars, even though I knew he might disagree with the Christian worldview that was implicit in those four pillars: the primacy of Christ, the priority of Scripture, and the pursuit of truth, which leads to the practice of wisdom, wisdom being the optimal way for the human being to live, which includes the optimization of human liberty and freedom. And that, Mr. Rubin, if you want to be free, you've got to have these boundaries to live within: the Christ, Scripture, truth, wisdom. And history has proven that that's the best context for freedom that we could ever have. And Mr. Rubin, I'm a classical liberal because I believe in liberty. I believe in freedom. And that's why I titled my book, Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas, because it's only by conserving these time-tested truths that we can stop this arrogance, this utopian nightmare of marching for superiority in the market square of ideas by destroying everybody else and everybody else's ideas and burning their books and censoring them from social media platforms. Mr. Rubin, if you want to be free, it's the biblical worldview, it's the Judeo-Christian ethic, it's the worldview of Christ that sets us free to have the discussion that you and I are having on your show right now. That's why we're enjoying this, because you, Mr. Rubin, intuitively know that if you disagree with me, you don't accomplish anything by simply censoring me. That the better way to engage with people is through conversation and debate. And let the truth win. If you're right, Mr. Rubin, so be it. Let truth be the judge. Not you, not me. Let truth be the judge. And if I'm right, let truth be the judge. Because, Mr. Rubin, Jesus told us, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So what's the solution in today's debate if we lose? Continue to wave the banner of truth. March as a classical liberal. Wave the banner of liberty. Be a defender of freedom. History has shown time and time again that it's those who fight and march for freedom that ultimately win, and I believe it's because of Jesus' promise, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. He didn't say the truth might set you free, he said the truth shall set you free. So if you find yourself in a minority position where you don't have control of the political structures of your time, continue to wave the banner of truth. Primacy of Jesus Christ, the priority of Scripture, the pursuit of truth, march for truth, be a classical liberal, wave the banner of liberty, fight for human freedom, and people will come from miles around to hear your message because nobody else will be saying it. Everybody else will be fighting for control. Mark my words, if there are bonfires being fueled by books, yes, you'll have a rabid crowd celebrating that, shouting Heil Hitler, but you'll have millions of people in the background that rightfully are scared and very, very disturbed by that because they know intuitively, because they're made in the image of God, they know intuitively that that's the antithesis of what it means to be a human being, of what it means to be free, and that if they imbibe that bloodlust, that desire to hold the ring of power, that it won't end well. Because ultimately, Mao Zedong turned on the Red Guard. That's the end of the story. He turned on the Red Guard, and he exiled all of those students into the rice paddies of China, where many of them died. Because they foolishly, like lemmings following the Pied Piper, grasped for power and ultimately lost all their freedom. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.